All right. This time, the chairperson will briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Orlando Group. Saturday night speakers meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety and attendance at a group conscious meeting. I'm Eric. I'm an alcoholic. Oddly enough, I have attended a group conscious meeting, or else I wouldn't be standing up for chairing. But for those of you that haven't attended a group conscious, do a group conscious and find out. Sobriety date is March 21st, 2003. Sober by the grace of God and you people in these rooms, and that's it. The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is speaking. So now I get to introduce the speaker, and it's with great honor that I get to do this. You know, and it's an honor to chair the meeting at Central, because this was one of the first meetings I came to when I moved here some years back. I moved here with a little bit of sobriety, and people, if you've ever moved somewhere in sobriety, you know that if you're not a newcomer, people don't tend to rally around you as much, and they're like, oh, he can find his way, he knows what to do. But I really felt welcome here, and I appreciate it, and to everybody who is here and who is not here still. You know, in our literature, it talks about camaraderie and joyousness and unselfishness and things of that nature. And in our literature, it doesn't say. I haven't found the word sponsor in the big book, but I know that I moved here with a little bit of sobriety, and I was hurting for a support group because I didn't get sober in Orlando. I didn't know anybody. I was scared and. You know, I went to a meeting and there was this guy there who he probably didn't even have 6 months of sobriety, right? But this guy reached out to me and saved me that day. I might have drank, I don't know. You know what I mean? And so this guy carried a measure of humility and of, you know, and he was that catalyst, you know, the Bill talking to Bob, the miracle across the table. He happened to be that day. So if you're new and you think you don't have anything to offer, listen to this guy's story, and you know, this guy is one of my best friends in the entire world. He's helped me go through birth, death, marriage, divorce, anything he could possibly go through in this program, and I love him to death, and I'm honored to have him speak. So he can probably tell you better than I can. So why don't you welcome Rob?
Good evening, everybody. My name is Rob, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Rob.
It's grateful to be here and be sober, and I'll settle down in a minute, but I am a little nervous, and no matter how many times I've done this, it's still the same feelings until I settle in. My sobriety date is March 5, 2005. I got sober here in Orlando, Florida. My home group has changed because I've relocated, but ODAC, Pine Hills Grace Group, would always be my home group. You know, they tell us we should tell what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. You know, I did the alcohol and the dry goods, but for the respect of AA, I will stick to alcoholism and the solution thereof. I got sober long ago after I had first been introduced to AA. And I'm looking at this apparatus. Is this a recorder?
Yeah.
That's new to me, but you know, when I came to AA on my own accord back in '95, and you know, the old timers back then, if you talked about drugs or mentioned dry goods, they screamed across the room and told you that there was NA down the road somewhere. And so for you know, I see the importance of upholding the integrity of AA and the traditions that pertain to alcohol. So, what it was like for me, you know, growing up, I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. So, welcome to the guy, Jacksonville Beach. I grew up on the west side, I-10 and McDuff. Working class family, single mother raised me, a very good role model, a very good mother. I chose the path I chose. I wasn't exposed to it in my home, but all I had to do was walk outside the door. Long story short, growing up, I didn't feel a part of. I always felt different, felt alone. I was the only child. And growing up, I always felt, scared. Now that I've been in sobriety, I can tell you that I felt scared. And that came, I acted out in various ways to hide that. I picked up my first drink at an early age. And like everybody else, I felt a part of. Inhibitions floated away. I was able to do things that normally I didn't have the courage to do. And like everybody else who's a true alcoholic, it progressed. I'll speed this up and get to when I was introduced to AA. I was pretty much sentenced to AA when I was in the military. And that was back in, I don't remember quite, but I knew I was 20, and you guys, they were telling me I had a problem with alcohol. And the only thing I thought was if that guy wouldn't have pushed me to the point of assaulting him, I would not be in this position. I was in denial that I was in denial. They wanted me to take an abuse. I wouldn't say I was an alcoholic. I wouldn't hold your hands. I wouldn't say no prayers. And they tolerated me for about 2 weeks. And they finally said, Rob, if you don't play the game, we're going to send you back to your unit. They're going to discharge you. And having a dishonorable discharge is just like having a felon on your record. So I began to play the game. I graduated. I was the guy that gave the speech. I was a little leader and all of this stuff. And it was weird because I had the guys I drink with slowly start filtering in. One was there when I got there. One came in when I was leaving. And, I graduated. And one of my closest friends picked me up at 8 in the morning with a 40-ounce of beer. And that's how that went. By the time I came to AA on my own accord, and before I get to that, there was one guy, and I was talking to a guy last night about this, how we never know how we impact a person. I probably would never see this guy ever again, but who knows? He had a message. He looked like me, because when I came to the rooms, I was really sick, and nobody looked like me, so how could you understand me? You guys talk a different language. And a lot of it, looking back, was just the low self-worth I was already beginning to have. So this guy shared his story, and I noticed when he drove up, he had a Cadillac, so he looked like the guys I looked up to in the neighborhood I grew up in. He was sharp-dressed. He could talk, and he talked about where he came from, the gutter, to how he had halfway houses. I didn't know what one was, and how he was prosperous in every aspect of his life. And for whatever reason, that stuck with me. Every meeting I went to, we were disruptive. We tried to talk to the girls. They told us to get out. You got to probably be pretty disruptive for them to tell you to get out the meeting. But 20 years old, I wasn't having it. So long story short, I never forget October 18th, 1995, I had my moment of clarity. I looked in that mirror, and I saw myself as I really was. For somebody who lived a delusional life, people long before I recognized an alcoholic, you guys told me I had a problem with alcohol, and I saw it that day. And that's truly, I feel, a gift from God to just snap out of it and look in the mirror and see myself as I really was. So I came to AA, I did what you guys told me to do, and I regressed, and I got drunk. Somebody I really respect the other day told me, and we're talking about something, they said, there's no way you can live a consistently dishonest life and stay sober. And I found that out firsthand. And that's my experience. It took me 6 years, a career down the tube, kids and a wife gone, attempted suicide, 13 treatments in detox centers, 3 different states. Before I came back to AA, pretty much, AA was the last house on the block. And I don't know what it is, but it just seems like when AA is the last house on the block, it seems to work for stubborn alcoholics. You know what I mean? I couldn't get sober with the career, the car, and jumping out of treatment, job waiting for me, insurance paying the bills, and I just couldn't stop. And I just couldn't get honest enough and get willing. So, you know, I went on this run for 6 years. I come back to AA October 16, 2004, and I walked into the detox center on Gore Street. And my old sponsor at the time, he was a counselor there, and he pulled the string and got me a bed. I went through the program. They sent me out to somewhere on Michigan and by OBT. And then they put us out there on East Colonial. And when I got out, 2 weeks later, I found myself drunk. I don't know what happened that night. It was nothing out of the ordinary. You put intoxicants in your system, you get your mood altered. 3 hours. I didn't get the euphoria that I normally got. It was really short-lived. Where normally I can extend it, it was real short-lived. And I came back to AA, and I haven't been back out since. And that's truly a miracle. I came back in the rooms. By the time I got here, I was so sick that I didn't want anything to do with God. I had a sponsor, they call him Jesus Jerry. And God bless him, I saw him today. And he would drag me to these Bible studies way out in Claremont somewhere. And I struggled with God as it is, because the thing about it, if you drink like I did and you push all your friends, family, drinking buddies out of your life, and if you're a selfish, self-centered alcoholic to the core like I was, I'm not going to blame myself for my predicament. Who's else left to blame? And that's God. So I came around, as the book described, as agnostic temperament. I didn't want anything to do with it. So here's this guy dragging me to these Bible studies, Jesus meetings, whatever you want to call them. And, you know, I talk to people, and they're like, Rob, you gotta let his higher power be his, because I felt uncomfortable talking to him. He had did so much for me. He gave up his time. Never once did he say he was too busy to talk to me. And I struggled with trying to tell him I don't want to go to these Bible studies no more. And when I finally got the nerve to tell him, he could care less. You know? He laughed, and it was truly funny. But, you know, coming in, I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew I was insane. You guys didn't have to persuade me on that. But I did have a problem with the third step. And I read those that step, and to me, it translated in my brain that I needed to be a saint, and I couldn't do certain things that I got pleasure out of, and I was going to have to walk the straight and narrow. And Jerry looked at me, and he said, look at your crummy life. Why don't you try something different? And that was a turning point for me. I worked my steps with that guy. And he took me as far as we were meant to go. And the guy that originally helped me get treatment was a guy that I picked back up as my sponsor. And I live with a couple in the program, Eric, and those guys showed me how to do the deal. I watched Eric sit out there on that patio, and before I got to his home, only thing I did for meditation was read the 24-hour day book and God please keep me sober, and boom, I'm going. And I would do it in my car as it's warming up. And that guy was the first person that I saw that really, I mean, he would sit in the chair with his foot in the chair, and I'm like, dude, you're going to levitate one day. Because he would sit out there, you know. But I respected what he had. And so I started mimicking him. You guys told me to act as if, and you guys told me to do what y'all did. You guys told me to make the first 164 my experience, and I might stay sober. So I started off at his house with the meditation and prayer. And so going forward, you know, doing the steps, doing the fourth step, and all these glaring defects are just glaring. I did his fifth step. And what I vowed I was going to take to my grave that I didn't write down, because just didn't write them down. And I'll forget doing the fifth step, and the guy looked at me and he was like, cut all this horse crap, He slammed the tablet shut, and he looked me in my eye, and he said, "Tell me that stuff you was going to take to the grave." And I told him. And it was a sunny day at Barnett Park, and it was a beautiful day after going through that process. You know, in the third steps, they talk about sometimes a great effect, and they talk about the people like me, sometimes it's going to be of a slow learning process, more the educational variety. The fifth step, I felt an immediate impact. No longer was I, at that moment, carrying a load of, I abandoned my kids and my family. How could I do that? I'm a terrible dad and all this stuff. And I proceeded with the steps. The ninth step, and I don't want to gloss over the six and seven because I'm going to get into that later. But the ninth step was when I saw more proof. I saw how powerful God was. You know, some people told me, "That's great. I'm glad what you're doing. Don't ever contact me again." But keep doing what you're doing. You're looking good. You're sounding good. And something's changing with you. But some people, the power of forgiveness is one of the purest forms of love there is. And I got to experience that. You know, so here I am, chugging along, totally comfortable in Orlando, not looking past 2 months out. My company gets acquired, and I was, my boss kind of like, "Hey, Rob, if you want a lesson role with the company, then stay put. If you don't, put your resume out there." And lo and behold, I get two offers down in South Florida. And, you know, for a guy like me, when I look at my life, I had never been successful at staying by myself. I was terrified. I left a halfway house after 11 and a half months, and I stayed with Eric and Sharon for about 2.5 years, and I was totally terrified. I couldn't pinpoint why at the time. Only thing I knew is I've never did good on my own since I've been a grown-up out in my mother's house. And you know, the sponsor I had, Al V, he looked me in my eyes and he said, "Rob, there's AA down there just like it is here in Orlando. Do what you do here and you will stay sober." And we had our last supper. We had our last supper at the village over in Winter Park. And he took me to dinner and we were getting ready to go. And he shook my hand and he let me know he was no longer my sponsor and I needed to get down there and get connected. You know, so here I am going to, you know, I never thought I would be in South Florida. I was thinking, "Oh, I want to experience California, maybe Dallas." And, you know, God's will for me was down there. This whole process, I'm praying God's will. It's an opportunity of a lifetime. You know, background check comes up. That stalls the process for 2 weeks. And I was a mess the whole 2 weeks. I was a mess. And so I get there. My loving roommates, they had a going away party for me, and you know, I'm kind of reserved, kind of more the guy and that's like old behaviors. I had an uncle that taught me certain things about how you handle yourself in certain situations, and to this day I still kind of default to that. And I'm not the guy that's out in front, center of attention. I'm kind of the guy that people will know my face but they won't know my name, and I'm sure that changes with time. But they, against my will, Sharon, bless her heart, she's like, "Rob, we're going to do this for you." And I'm like, "But you don't have to." And I was glad, reflecting back, the strength of the people that came out, probably were anywhere from 50 to 60 people showed up that night. And then they did something where people talked about how I impacted their life, and they signed this thing in this little book. And that carried me for a while when I was there. I went to meetings all over. Working North Lauderdale, living in Boca, and I went to meetings from Miami all the way up to Palm Beach trying to find my home, my new home. I was sponsorless. I got to the point where I had to pray. Because it's, you know, God, and when I look back, I don't know what God's plan is for me, and I don't want to pretend or come across as if I knew that. But if I'd have stayed in Orlando, with all my friends saying, we got this going on this weekend, we got this going on Wednesday, go here, go there. You know, it's nothing like getting totally uprooted out your home group, out your comfort zone, plucked in a new surrounding, not knowing a soul, by yourself. You come home, you look at the walls. If you got a mirror, you look in the mirror. And you get a choice. Do I want to strive towards the path that has worked? And then these defects start surfacing up a little bit? Or do I want to go down that path? And I just went to meetings like crazy. And I finally found a place, and I had prayed to God, because I needed to get connected. And here I'm sitting outside a payway on a Friday, totally lonely, missing how I used to just go and hang out at ODAP from 5:30 to whenever, going to the Winter Park group at 10:30, and I'm just like feeling all alone. And there's a group of women, and they come out of payway, and mind you, I had been praying, and I heard somebody talking our language. I was like, and when they came by, one said, I said, hello, your friend of Bill W. And she looked, and she's like, oh my gosh, she's like, get up, give me a hug, and she hugged me. And she hugged me, and I told her I was new, and I hadn't found a home yet, and she told me about a meeting in Boca Pines Club, and she said, go there tomorrow. It's a 10 o'clock meeting, whatever time it was, but you got to get there an hour early. And I'm thinking to myself, Saturday? And you told me I got to get there an hour early? I mean, I got to get up at 7 a.m.? Because I'm a slow guy in the morning. And so I go there. And it's been about two months now I've been in South Florida. And I raise my hand. Like Eric talked about, I know that feeling that he experienced now firsthand. But, you know, just coming to meetings just wasn't getting it because I had been connected here. There's power in numbers, I believe that, and that's why I found us. They got the first word as we. And I rose my hand like a newcomer. I said, I've been here a couple of months. I don't feel like drinking, but I need to get connected. And the men after that meeting swarmed around me like I was a day one newcomer. And I had more numbers than I could deal with. And at that meeting, I saw a guy pick up an 8-year medallion. And I was like, you know, I just need a temporary sponsor. Somebody that I can talk to, be accountable to. And I picked him up. And he carried me for about 3 months. And it was, he helped me greatly in that period. And the sponsor that I have today is the one I got after him. And he's been great. And when I say that, I say that because I need people to tell me the truth, to put the friendship on the line, to tell me the unadulterated truth. And he does that to the point where I went a month and a half, 2 months without talking to him. I told him something pretty heavy. And he gave it to me. He didn't hold a punch. And we didn't talk for 2 months. And I said to myself one meeting, because I'm hearing everybody that I respect in the room, and it just took one more person to say it. And she's like, that's why I love my sponsor, because she tells me what I need to hear. She don't co-sign my stuff. And when she said that, I was like, okay. And I called him up, and I told him how I've been feeling. He's like, I pretty much figured that. And I almost called you the other day, and we laughed about it, and we moved forward. And I was, no, he didn't take it. He laughed. He laughs at everything. I tell him I act out on something, he will laugh his butt off. Because I'm the guy that don't know how to process feelings sometimes, still to this day. I'm still learning. I'm still a baby when it comes to that. When I hurt, that's one that I don't do too well with. And when somebody close to me went out, I just did not know how to handle that. And you know, he told me when I got up here tonight, he said, don't tell this glorious speech about how you came from breaking into your own home and thank God you're not drinking today. Yes, that's very important. That's like the baseline to have any shot at getting a miracle. He told me to talk about in a general about way my struggles. For the person that's sitting in the room that hasn't gotten to a point to talk to their sponsor about their struggles or talk to their support groups and holding it in, not knowing that at the end of, you know, once we've been around a few days and we're not fighting the obsession, you know, which master you gonna serve? We're gonna go this way, we're gonna go this way. And so it's important for me to talk about it. So I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, blue collar town. I know anything about a casino. And I get there and I take my mom, it's her birthday, give her a little change, and I played around. Long story short, when somebody close to me went out, I went and blew a lot of money. It was just like, I just didn't understand how to process the deep hurt that I felt. That knowing a loved one was out there and the insanity had returned. And I blew a lot of money, and when I called my sponsor, you know, he did it on a whole nother level back when he was doing it. And he said, "How much you blow?" And I told him, and he bust out laughing. He laughed. And I'm like, "What's wrong?" I almost hung up the phone. I'm like, "Dude." And he's like, "Let's get to the root causes." And he gave me some assignments to write down. He believes in pen to the paper. And you know what? He doesn't read it. He tells me, like I tell my sponsor, that's for you to read. And as a result of that, I get a little bit closer to where God wants me to be. The beauty of the program, when I look at the results of when I do some crappy stuff and people forgive me, and it's totally incomprehensible to me how somebody can have that much love in them and they can forgive me if I wrong them. When I do what he asks me to do, my sponsor, because I'm finding out too, it's not all about just Rob getting better, because I'm supposed to be on the other end helping that newcomer get better. I should be there for my friends, sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And that's what I'm learning in this deal. People that I respect seem to say, "Stay in 6 and 7. And you know, that's like between, like that step 8 kind of get glossed over in the big book. But when you open it, 12 and 12 got a bunch of stuff in it. A bunch of stuff in his head, and it talks about how we should look at these relationships and how we should extricate this important information about ourselves. It don't tell us just that, you know, year one it was great. My sponsor made me put check marks against names, and I formed my list that way. But as we stay sober, you know, more is revealed. The little subtle little things that kind of mount up like that avalanche, and it just snowballed. And before you know it, you just made a enemy out of a friend. It's important for me to look at that stuff. I'm reading a book right now, 6 and 7, and it talks about these character defects. And it talks about how God doesn't reveal more to us than we can live up to. That's been my experience. When I first came around here, it was just stay sober, go to meetings, do what you told. And then now more is being revealed, and it's like I have no idea how to deal with it. And then in the same breath, when we look at step 7, it tells us pain need not be the threshold to change. It talks about humility should be something sought after, so that we don't have to go through that pain. And humility for me is real simple. It's either asking God for help or another human being for help. You know, because when I see people with time go out, self-sufficiency rises, humility lowers, and then the drink starts sounding pretty good. And once that's done, it's over. I know for me. And so right now where I'm at, I got these two beautiful sponsees. This one guy's about 50-something, going through a divorce, and he's funny. He does what I ask him to do. I mean, he's a good guy, you know, and I love him. And you know, I struggle with intimacy sometimes in relationships. Only child. I never had to play with anybody. My brothers. my brothers. I'm 38 and my brother's 24. So I learned how to play with myself. I learned how to deal with self. So I struggle when you try to get too close to me. It's like it doesn't come natural. This guy. I felt some self-pity, and I did what you guys did for me. I made him write a gratitude list, and this was the second time going here with him. Long story short, I said, all right, that shit about you got a car, you got a house, you got food. Write the stuff that you wouldn't have if you wasn't sober. I said, if you had glimpses of serenity, write that. Glimpses of joy. So he writes his list, and he's telling me about it the next day. And he had just cut up because the lawyer contacted him, and he's going through this marriage that's dissolving after 20-something years, and we're getting ready to go our separate ways. And he looked at me, he's like, you know what else I put on the list? I'm like, whatever. And he's like, I was grateful for my sponsor. And you talking about that warm, fuzzy deep down, and the people that's shaking their heads, they've been there, they know what I'm talking about. It was touching. It felt good. And it wasn't artificial. It slowly dissolved, but it's still there even when I talk about it. So my home group, they call it the zoo down there, Pompano Beach Group. I've been to the nice groups where everybody got Bentleys and some good meetings down there, good recovery. A lot of good men. A lot of good women doing the deal. And I found myself in a meeting right on US 1 in Atlantic is my home group, and we see it all. ODAD doesn't have anything on that plate. And I love ODAD. And I sometimes, if the energy is too wired, I have to get out. I mean, yeah, I won't break any traditions by talking about it anymore. But I've come to find some good people down there. After 2 years, finally, if I don't go to a meeting for a few days, my phone rings, just like it used to be here. I got people who come back from vacations, and they check in and be like, Rob, I just wanted to say hello. I had a great time in New York. Just calling you one of my supports. Just like it used to be here. Eric was pivotal in telling me it takes time, because I was just like, you know, I'm success in parts of my life, and I'm like, the most important thing is my sobriety. Don Snow told me that when I left the Center for Drug Free Living. He told me to plan my day around a meeting. I'm a meeting maker. I love meetings. I love AA. I go every day. And I don't have to go every day because I'm not fighting the nasty obsession. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys brought me out of hell, literally. So, you know, I do my meetings. When asked to do my service, I share. You know, I had a couple of good excuses not to call Eric and say, dude, I can't come. Some things have come out the blue. I've had to help some people. And but you know what? This place was pivotal in my sobriety. It was here. The room was situated differently. There was a little old lady sitting against that wall. And that was a night I heard, don't quit before the miracle happens. Now, you hear that all the time, but that was a night I heard, and I heard it right in this room. I knew it was good sobriety here. I had been here with Al back when it was a little brown house, probably a little bit further, right down on the corner. It was smoky, but it was some good recovery here, and some of the same faces I've seen. So, you know, where I'm at now is, you know, trudging along. I like to look up words in a dictionary. I don't like to take people words for it in AA. Sometimes they shit sounds good, excuse my language, but it's just not accurate. It's a thing going around down there that it's the walk with purpose. Trudging is walk with purpose.
Yes.
And I looked it up in Webster's, and it did not say that. It said exactly what I thought it, what it sounds like, trudge. And let me tell you, in AA, I've had the trudge. One of our members that are not here, I remember I don't deal with rejection well in no form, fashion, other matter. And I was going through it, and it was a Friday. And don't drink, and this too shall pass. That's what I got in the text, and I was like, it got to be deeper than that. But that's what I needed. You know, and I wasn't thinking about drinking, but that's what came out. And, you know, it's a day-to-day time for me. As a result of AA, I got my kids back in my life. The ex-wife who wanted to make sure that under no circumstances, if anything happened to her, was I to get custody of the kids because I abandoned them and left them high and dry. She's reversed that will she put out to have her sister and her brother-in-law take care of them. Her brother and her sister-in-law take care of our kids. The brother that I stole from and physically assaulted, he calls me for advice on major decisions in life. Should I stay in school? Should I go to school? Should I go pursue my master's? What should I do, brother? That mom who the last time I called her when I got my call at the Center for Drug Free Living, who said, okay, when I told her where I was at, she was like, okay, that's it. And she hung up. That same mother that always, out of all previous 12 trips to those type of institutions, was always, what do you need? Do you have clean clothes? You need cigarettes? You need money? You need a calling card? You need stamps? She was like, okay. And hung up. That woman, I'm able to show her to a good time on her birthday and see a smile on her face. There was a write-up in a business periodical, and I sent it to her. And I was responsible for the activities in architecture in this particular region of the world. And she was like, I'm so proud of you. And my sponsor has me doing these little intimacy exercises. So if I hug you a little too tight, it's because he told me to do these type of things. I did something I'd known I wouldn't have said anything, and I was like, Mom, I can't take all the credit. It's because you're a great mom. And she came back, I love you, Big Caps. You know, The employer that makes me responsible for a lot of resources, I was the guy that stole company resources and assets. By the grace of God, I am sober today. Any success that I have, I can't take credit for. I understand that I can leave this meeting right now and be drunk. I understand that I did that for a lot of years. I sit here and know that my definite God is real simple. He's an infinite power and love. I've learned that through my short period of sobriety, that in his purest, rawest form, not the complicated, he is of infinite power and love. I've seen that through forgiveness firsthand. I've seen that through my own testimony of sobriety, sanity. Sanity is very important after you've been around a while. It's not about it. Let me tell you. It really is. We either do the deal or we'll have a very not so good life being abstinent from alcohol. I don't want that. It's probably why I keep coming to meetings. And then sometimes I do find myself just habitually coming to meetings, floating through, and then one day my head pops out my butt. I'm like, man, I don't feel connected. You know? Because when I'm in service and that transfer of love happens, I feel connected. If I'm just coming and getting what I can get out of the meeting and taking, and I go on about my life, my bills are paid and da-da-da-da-da. Then a certain amount of time happens and I don't feel connected. But what's cool is that there's a key of willingness that our literature talks about. And with that key, we can tap back into the sunlight of the Spirit. And listen at me, this agnostic dude that came around here talking about the Son of the Spirit. Sunlight of the Spirit. It's amazing what this program will do. Today I do try to see where religious people are right. But I do know that it has its place. It has its place. AA, I go to traditions meeting every week. And that has helped me greatly. If we do what our forefathers laid out for us, because they learned from bumping their head, hitting a brick wall, fighting amongst each other and their egos, they've done all the grunt work for us and laid out a recipe for success. And if we follow that, we'll be okay. And we can have the doors open for the alcoholic who's still suffering. And that's all encompassing as far as I understand it. It doesn't say the guy that, or young lady that's struggling with one day. That could be the guy with 10 years just abstinent and suffering. You know, I've seen that. All of us are equally important as far as I'm concerned. I need the guy who has been here longer than me to give me experience, strength, and hope. And I need the newcomer more than anything as well. So I'll say this and shut up, and I don't know what I'm about to say. But you know what, and if nobody told you that God loves you, know that God loves you and we love you. And if you're sitting here like I was for a long time thinking, why am I wasting these people time? My track record shows I'm going to get drunk. I'm not even worth this God they're talking about. Just stay and don't quit before the miracle happens. Thanks for letting me share.